You're listening to Now I've Heard Everything, conversations with the icons of our time.
And so I stood and stood into the face, and the fan turned out to be Dr. Martin Luther King. When I said I was leaving the show, he said, "You cannot. You absolutely cannot."
Actress Nichelle Nichols. Today on Now I've Heard Everything, I'm Bill Thompson. Nichelle Nichols was cast in the role of Communications Officer Uhura on the original TV series Star Trek in 1966. But it was anything but a routine casting. Almost overnight, Nichols became an icon and a role model, but it took a chance meeting with a powerful and charismatic man to convince her of her own stature. Nichols was a show business veteran by the time she was cast in Star Trek, and so after just 1 year on the show, she was ready to spread her wings and try something else new. But then she met a fan who changed her mind and changed her life. Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day in the U.S., and so today, Nichelle Nichols' story of how Dr. King changed her life and the future direction of Star Trek itself. It's a story she told in her 1994 memoir called Beyond Uhura. That's when I had the chance to meet her and talk with her. So here now, from 1994, Nichelle Nichols.
I was just curious, maybe an irrelevant question at the outset. Why didn't you stick with Lynn Mayfair?
Oh, for goodness sake. What a wonderful thing to remember. I just was not a Lynn Mayfair. I felt like such a phony. It didn't fit me somehow. And I always wanted to carry my family name. But I also was not a Grace. And so I went to my mother, and my parents had a family meeting and said, I want a new name. And so my mother said, "What kind of name would you like, dear?" And I said, "I want your name." My mother's name was Lishia, L-I-S-H-I-A. And she said, "My darling, thank you for the compliment, but one is more than enough on the planet." There were a couple of other Leishas, though, because Mother was named after her aunt, and there are several named after her. And she says, "Enough is enough." So she renamed, she said, "I always wanted to name you Michelle, and we've decided you should have the same initials. So you're going to have NN." She thought of, gave a lot of thought, you know, and she says, "Why not Nichelle?" And so I was renamed Nichelle.
That's some nice equilibrium there.
Yes.
That's a nice alliteration to the
name
as well.
Yes, yes, yes.
But what a childhood, what a growing up years you had.
Yes, yes.
This is a fascinating story.
Thank you very much. I had wonderful parents and great opportunity. I had parents who believed that a person could be anything they wanted to be if they applied three things. Educate yourself in the area you want to perform. Dedicate yourself, meaning never let anyone turn you around or tell you you can't be that. And then apply it. Application. And I said, "Application." When Daddy said, "Get off your butt and do it." And in my family, we would sit around the table. We could talk about anything, as long as we were serious about the subject, as long as we brought something to the subject. We had family talks where it was free to discuss sex, topics in the news, whatever was going on in the neighborhood, where other children were being shooed and seen and not heard, you know. We were pretty progressive, fairly, but a very close-knit family. I come from a family of, My father had three daughters when he married my mother by a previous marriage. Mother had one son by a previous marriage, and together they had six, of which I'm one.
Yours, mine,
fortunately.
And ours.
Exactly. And so, but there was always only three or four at the most children at home because we came sort of in sets. And we had a wonderful view of the world. And so when I wanted to be, since I can remember, an entertainer, they set out to give me the best there was of training there was available. And I started out as a ballerina and a singer and a writer. I wrote skits and performed in them since I was a very, very young child. And I always starred in them.
But really, I mean, there are lots of kids who have their hopes set someday to be in show business and someday to be an entertainer. But at 16, to be performing alongside Duke Ellington.
Well, let me put it in context. I have always said I'm one of the luckiest people alive because I've always been able to do what it was that I dreamed of being, always been able to be what I've always dreamed of being, and that's an entertainer. And an actor, and a singer, and a dancer, and a writer, and to do those wonderful things. And when I was 14 years old, I was cast in a big musical show in Chicago, which is my hometown. And at the Sherman House, in a famous Sherman House Hotel. And the greatest stars of the day came through and saw that show that whole year that we performed there. And one of the people who came was Josephine Baker and Lena Horne and Ella Fitzgerald and Stan Kenton and all the wonderful big people who were playing in town. They'd come to see our show. And I was discovered there by the great Duke Ellington, who remembered me 3 years later when I was 17 and asked me to choreograph and perform a ballet to one of his new musical suites. It was called Pretty and the Wolf, which he narrated as I performed it. And during the tour, imagine what that felt like to a young girl. And during the tour, the band singer got sick. And I used to stand in the wings and watch this beautiful tall woman sing. And I learned all the songs and copied her movements. And I'd do her movements with her and listen to her inflections. And was so. She got sick. And guess who went on for the rest of the tour? Talk about starting from the top.
Now, see,
with
given
the great Duke Ellington.
See, given all of that context and all of that background, if you fast forward a few years to hailing frequencies are open, Captain, it almost seems kind of a letdown.
No, it was a progression. It was a natural progression. From there, of course, I got married and had a child and then realized that the marriage was not for me. Returned to show business after 3 years because I wanted to be with my son. But again, very fortunate to perform in that meantime in Chicago, at the famous Blue Angel. Did a big Calypso show. And, when I first met Bill Cosby across the street playing at Mr. Kelly's. And, I met through my life many famous people who have touched my life and encouraged me and influenced me. And then I've traveled all over the world with shows, and many things happened for me and with me. And I was moving along and was on my way to Broadway in a musical comedy by Oscar Brown Jr., starring Burgess Meredith and one Nichelle Nichols, my big break, right? And unfortunately, the show didn't make it. But again, a wonderful turning point for me because I went on to be seen and discovered by Richard Rodgers and asked to do the London company of his wonderful musical that Diane Carroll starred in, No Strings. And they even created a musical for me. Unfortunately, in the meantime, it was canceled. Mr. Rodgers became very ill and ultimately passed away, and they didn't do it. But all of these near misses, the pitfalls, the disappointments, the achievements, and so forth. And I was in a major musical in Europe when the call came through for me to do Uhura. And, of course, was not called Uhura. As a matter of fact, I named her Uhura.
Really?
Yes. I happened to be reading a book called Uhuru, which is a wonderful treatise by O'Rourke, a treatise on Africa. And it was a bestseller at that time. And I walked in the interview with this big book and these five gentlemen there and Gene Roddenberry. And we talked for 20 minutes about this book before I ever got to my interview. And I've often thought the girls outside waiting to come in. And usually interview is about 10 minutes, you know. They must be livid. Well, I did get the role, of course. And then Gene Roddenberry took me to lunch and he says, I want to discuss something with you about the part. He said, I love that name Uhuru, and I was going to have you from America. He said, but what do you think if, because he hadn't created the character. He just knew he wanted a black woman as the communications officer, fourth in command on the bridge. And he said, what about if I designed your character to come from the United States of Africa, and your native tongue would be Swahili. But I want to use that word Uhuru, but it's too hard for you. And I said, why not let's do the Latin alliteration and soften it with and call it Uhura. And so it came to be. He said, that's it.
After this short break, Nichelle Nichols talks about that fateful encounter with Martin Luther King.
Start your day with Now I've Heard Everything.
We post new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Subscribe now so you'll have something fresh to listen to and get your day going.
Now back to my 1994 conversation with Nichelle Nichols.
Did you realize at the outset just how momentous that particular role, that particular person that you played was going to be, what a role model you were going to become?
Obviously, I did not, because after the first year, I told Gene Roddenberry I was leaving the show, and he was devastated, and he prevailed upon me to take the weekend and think about it, but I was adamant, and as fate would have it, I went to an NAACP fundraiser that very weekend, and which I almost didn't go to. And when I got there, someone said to me, Miss Nichols, someone is very much a big fan of yours and would very much like to meet you. And so I stood, graciously put my fork down and turned, and because I'm always gracious to fans. And if they love you, the least you can do is be courteous. And so I stood and stood into the face, and the fan turned out to be Dr. Martin Luther King. I was flabbergasted. And he was so gracious. And when I said I was leaving the show to pursue I never got any further than that. He said, you cannot. You absolutely cannot. I jumped. He said, don't you realize that you have the very first non-stereotypical role on television? Think about it. This isn't a black role. This isn't a female role. This is a role you have created with intelligence and dignity and passion and compassion and beauty. And you show the world, people who don't look like us, for the first time, they see us as we're supposed to be seen, as equals, men and women, and going forth in peaceful exploration. Men and women of all colors, and even an alien. He said, you absolutely cannot. You have changed the face of television forever, and you cannot let that door close. I was so impressed. I was so touched. It was such a compelling argument that for the first time, I understood what Gene Roddenberry was attempting to do, was achieving. And I thought about it. I could think of nothing over that entire weekend. And I thought, perhaps there really is more to life than just me, myself, and I. And I went back on Monday morning and went to Gene's office and told him what Dr. King had said, and if he still wanted me there in the show, I would remain. And a tear came to Gene's eye, and he said, God bless this man. Someone knows what I am attempting to achieve, and damn it, I'm going to achieve it.
You know, George said the same thing, that the show was about multiculturalism before we had that word, and about everybody as a team doing, as you said, the peaceful exploration of where no one has gone before.
Gene Roddenberry was such a visionary, and not a perfect man, but a perfect visionary. Who loved practical jokes. Loved practical jokes. But here's a man who could see beyond the immediate. And once I was in the show long enough, I realized and understood what he was doing and what he was achieving. I looked at it as being a co-conspirator with him. And I began to become aware of myself. And it was from that point that I realized there are young minds then. If this is what he is trying to achieve, then there are receivers out there who are taking this in and believing it. And so therefore, I am part of something that is impacting people's minds, and isn't it wonderful that it's in a positive way?
Mae Jemison, Whoopi Goldberg, untold thousands of others.
Thousands, little girls and young women who are brown-skinned beauties or blue-eyed blonde darlings who've come up to me and said, I want to be just like you when I grow up. Or who said to me, because of you, because there was a strong woman on TV when I was in school, I decided to finish my schooling. I'm a physicist now. Or I went into communications. Or I'm a doctor who became an astronaut. Or I became world famous, the most phenomenal movie star. I mean, Whoopi Goldberg's story is, I always laugh at it. I love her story. She said, I was 9 years old, girl. I turned on that television, and this beautiful black lady was there, and I scream, hurry, come! As a black lady on television, and she's not a maid. I think that is such a wonderful story. She said, you became my heroine, and I decided, because you were there, I could be anything I wanted to be. And I said, and you became a phenomena. And that is why she wanted to be in Star Trek, the Next Generation. She said, I really wanted to be. She said, when I grew up, she says, I used to watch you on there, and I wanted you to be my mama. I love it.
Oh, wow.
When Gene asked her, when Gene Roddenberry asked her why she wanted to be in The Next Generation, he said to her, you're a big movie star. Why would you want to be in this show? This is television. She said, it's all Nichelle Nichols' fault. And she told him the story. And he was going to turn this down. You know, he thought it would be too distracting. And you know, she's going to come in and I'll write her. She'll be in this part and she's going to last 2 minutes, you know. And he said, when she told him it's all Nichelle Nichols' fault, he said, you've got the part. He says, here's what I'll do. I will write a running role, and whenever you're not doing a major picture or available with notice, we write you in. And she said that was the highlight of her life, just being involved with anything called Star Trek.
It's all your fault.
It's all my fault. Well, you know that I recruited the first women and minority astronauts for the space shuttle program, and that does tie in with the story of Mae Jemison, who also was about 9 years old, looked up, saw Uhura, and said, I'm going to be an astronaut. And when I was recruiting 10 years later in 77, she was in medical school. And less than 10 years after that, she became the first African-American female astronaut, and she sought me out to tell me. And she's been my friend ever since.
All from a television show.
Well, you know, history repeats itself. I was influenced by great people. I never turned my back on it. I never gave up. Never, 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 never give up, as Winston Churchill said. And now I am inspiring other people. This is what my book is about. And in between there, two men who had a dream left a legacy that changed the world, and I had an opportunity to be part of it.
Nichelle Nichols died in 2022 at the age of 89. Now, you can get a copy of Beyond Uhura by Nichelle Nichols by tapping the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. We may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. Heardeverything.com is, by the way, where you can hear my 1993 interview with Lieutenant Uhura's commander, James T. Kirk, William Shatner.
The networks were very apprehensive about an interracial kiss, and they thought they might lose stations in the South or something or other. I don't know what they were thinking. So there was a great deal of apprehension about Nichelle and I kissing, even though the script called for it to be out of our hands, that we were being commanded to do so. And we never ended up kissing anyway.
And my 1995 conversation with Leonard Nimoy.
Where did the one arched eyebrow come from?
Actually, it was a natural response to a moment. Something said to me by someone, either McCoy or Kirk or someone. That was my natural response. It was something that I didn't realize that I had learned to do myself over time. And then realized when I saw it and when people commented on it, that I had found a small gesture which played against a rather impassive face, made a very large comment.
And of course, we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. Next time on Now I've Heard Everything, he came to America as a Bulgarian-American chemist, and in the early 1950s, he helped create something that is known today simply as the pill. My 1992 conversation with the man they call the father of the pill, Carl Gerassi.
The fact of the matter is that if the pill had not existed, there would have been a lot of unplanned pregnancies, a lot of illegal abortions, and with all the terrible side effects that went with it.
That's next time on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson.